Welcome to the Property Premier League, the weekly podcast where property meets Premier League football. I'm your host, Chris Mervin, and joining me are my co-hosts, Steve Green and Jamie Asplund. Each week, we'll dive into the world of property and football from the unique perspective of professionals who live and breathe both. As diehard fans of Spurs, Palace and Everton, we know a thing or two about the highs and lows that come with both the beautiful game and the property market. Whether it's the thrill of a last-minute goal or the challenges of a market shift, we've got the stories, insights and banter, sometimes, to keep you entertained. So if you're passionate about property, Premier League football or both, you're in the right place. So get ready for your weekly dose of all things property and football with the Property Premier League. Let's kick it off. So, guys, how are you guys?
Both yeah, very good. Chris. Very good. Are you okay, Jamie?
Yeah, nice, well, nice. This end in Lincolnshire, I can confirm we've got a little bit of last minute summer sun, so it's quite nice out there today. Bit of heat as well. You see people with coats on, then coats off, but it's quite nice here in Lincolnshire today.
Wow, weather watch. Exactly. With Jamie. This could be a new feature.
I might talk about that after results not. Tomorrow. I might have to go back to the weather.
Nice. So what have you guys been up to property-wise this week, guys, and the market? What have you been up to? Jamie first. So you've been obviously taking doing your little poll on what the weather's like and what people are wearing. But other than that, what
have you been world, doing? If I'm honest, has not started with the September kit we wanted, but it's still good. I think we mentioned it last week, quite constant in August with valuations, and it hasn't kicked on again in September. Might be because there's already a good level there already, but it's good. But a bit more, I would say, putting deals together and marketing. Obviously, I work as a foot soldier, as I like to call it, but I'm still there doing every day. I much enjoy that, but it is it's an okay property market, is what I'd like to call it.
Cool. Have you just been busy with valuations then this week, or is it viewings are more busy now because of people back at school and back?
Yeah, a bit of everything really. Valuations are steady. A few deals coming in. I tell you what, I have seen. Not sure we spoke about the level of our property market, and probably I don't want to keep going over old things, but it's the 700 market is quite high for where I am, and we have seen a couple of deals come back at that level. So it might just be a one-off, or it might just be a turn of things changing slightly with buyers filtering all the way through the market.
Very good, mate. Steve, what about you? I know you've been out of the county. You've had your passport.
I got my vest on, and I travelled north to Wrexham.
Yeah, all the places.
Yeah, I went to the Welcome to Wrexham Moneypenny and Rena Personnel Conference, property conference, which was really, really good, to be fair. I drove up on Tuesday, and then Tuesday afternoon we did a bit of networking at Moneypenny HQ, which is a ridiculous building. It's huge, and they have everything in there, from gym, bar, cafe, you name it. They employ 800 people in that building. It's an amazing building.
It's an insane
building.
Place, Steve, isn't it? When I first went, it's insane.
It's unbelievable. Like
the
nothing bird, I've ever
bird
seen.
The birdhouse, or the bird box, what they call it. It's yeah. Like people just go. It's amazing. Have you been, Chris?
No, I haven't. I've seen some clips of it on social media and stuff. And I think that the thing that hit me was that they seemed to really invest.
Yeah, 15 minutes. Yeah, exactly.
Which is obviously important.
There was a talk by a lady there from Moneypenny. It talked all about sort of the well-being of their staff and what they give their staff and how they look after each other, and how different people that join have a different coloured lanyard. So if they're lost, you know they're new to the business, and then that person will help them out. It's a really...
Oh, like in senior school when you're wearing different...
That was a long time ago.
Oh, their first year.
I think you're not allowed to wear the cone on the head for the bad trainer anymore at football. It's not seen as ethically right, but it's the opposite of that now. It's positive things, not bad things, to be fair.
Yeah. But no, it was good.
Nice. Any little gems there, Steve? Or no? You had a
yeah, well, that was on the Wednesday. On the Tuesday afternoon, they took us around Wrexham's stadium, which was quite good. We had a 5-6-a-side football tournament or game beforehand. Went to the turf. I didn't.
Did you play?
I blamed it on a dodgy knee that I dislocated a few years ago. And I'm going to the States next month, so there was no way I was going to ruin that for a half an hour game of football. Yeah, it was good to have.
Not even with a certificate from Dion Dublin.
No, see, that was late. Yeah, you're ruining it. But yeah, no, we went to the pub, the turf pub, and then in the evening they took us for a meal at the Lemon Tree restaurant / pub, and Dion Dublin was there from Homes Under the Hammers. Yeah, it was really, really well run. Great to do the networking before the actual main event, because when you arrived on the Wednesday, you felt like you knew everybody. You weren't like a fish out of water. Who do I talk to, etc. Yeah, it just in all, it was a really, really good event.
Do you use them as a company, Steve, yourself?
Rena Personal, I have done and do. Penny, I used them in a previous life for a firm I worked for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, met the guys there. Nice. Yeah, there was...
I've used them previously.
We still use them now, to be fair, and it's such an added benefit to what we do and just gives you that flexibility. So, yeah, really good.
I think with any business, it's always that. Do we employ somebody? How can we be accessible? What's the service levels? How are they going to drop? And you do worry about putting it off to another company. But from my experience there, and obviously they're doing really, really successful still now, and you guys still use them, Jamie, and they seem to be really on the ball. Which is a great football pun, obviously. They treated your company as an extension of theirs, and they really do sort of align with the same values. And I think you get to know the people who are answering the phone for you as well, don't you? Which is
great. Yeah.
Nice. Any sort of nuggets? What was the next day? Did you do sort of speeches as well? Was there any information there as well, Steve, about... I know you're a statistician.
You know that. I love a stat.
Loves a stat.
Yeah, 20 EA did a presentation, and there were some pretty interesting facts, which I've been working on a presentation for the staff this morning, and I won't go through all of them, but I'll run through it. You know, they were saying the residential transactions 15% higher in 2025 compared to 24. At new instructions, highest they have been in the last 10 years, and 3.7% up on 24. And supply has risen in all areas except Northern Ireland, but is strongest in London, the South East, and the Midlands.
That's the good news.
Price reductions are the highest volume we have ever seen by far. Year to date, 38.7% of completed sales had at least one price reduction compared to 38.1% in 24. Generally, price reductions are reducing in the north and increasing in the south. The one bit of nugget, bear with me a sec. Time to completion. This was a scary fact. So the time to completion has risen by 36% in the last 6 years and by 2.3% 3 days year on year. And the time scale comparisons, Northeast 3.6 months, Northwest 4 months, 3.9 East Midlands, 3.9 West Midlands and so on. But generally 4 months plus, where I'm in Southwest, 4.3 months.
It's not surprising, is it really? It doesn't come as a major shock, I guess, really. But I mean, obviously that's going to lead lovely, as if we've planned it, lovely onto our talk about home information packs in a minute. It's touched on very briefly last week. And actually, I think there's a good conversation to be had around that as well. So we'll talk about it in a minute after we talk about...
Just a quick on point, move on, well. Chris. Just for that, Steve, you said you love your stats. I'm guessing they're seeing a higher percentage of properties available for sale. So in hand, that is obviously the higher, more things being available means basically that there's more reductions happening because they're not selling at the price they're going on for. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Stats are great, aren't they? You make them sound...
Yeah.
Good or bad.
It's great having more for sale, isn't it? But you sort of then saying, well, if they're not selling, the next thing that comes hand in hand, like Steve just said there, is you're going to move from a house being on the market for X amount of weeks to a reduction. If it doesn't sell then, the next question is probably going to be a further reduction. And did the agent in the first place top it to win it? Did they put a cherry on it, as we used to say back in the day, and a double cherry and some whipped cream? Is that how far have they gone above where they actually believe it to be to get it all the way back down again?
Yeah, they're saying that it's 12 extra days to take to sell a house in the southwest, and then you've got 4.3 months of conveyancing.
Yeah, wow.
Bum twitchy. For me,
we're definitely going to have in our next couple of episodes, we're going to have the chance to speak to a conveyancer, a solicitor, about the conveyancing process, and we're also going to be able to speak to people about how they will speak, what they're bringing into the market will speed up the process of transactions as well. But again, it's all relative to, it's a bigger picture of about everything, isn't it? It's the overall rather than little bits don't really make a difference. It's that everything needs changing, which is the sad thing, I guess, really. My week, you're talking about Dion Dublin, Homes of the Hammer. He doesn't come down as far as our level down here because he doesn't travel any further than Birmingham, I believe. So we always have Martin Roberts. He's got a holiday home on the south coast of Devon, and so he always trips around to different ones. And I've been lucky enough to do a couple for Homes of the Hammer recently, and I went on the market yesterday. Sorry, on TV yesterday, and if you look at it. There's a lovely, smooth kitchen sideboard and a double tap. That's my new thing for Homes of the Hammer. So look into that. It was zoomed in as well. Lovely.
Check it out.
Lovely action. So that was pretty much my week from a celebrity point of view. Other than that, just been busy. Auction never stops. Every 6 weeks we put stuff on. We're going through a process now of putting stuff on for the October auction, as you know, Steve. It's a busy time of year as well. And the market in general for auctions is really, really positive. It has been year on year anyway. It's grown. It's seen as a more of an accepted route to market for private sellers now as well. And obviously we've had post-COVID, we had a lot of asset management companies as well where they were holding on from doing anything with properties in regards to taking them back in, etc. And now they are going through the process of offloading and they're becoming more plentiful as well. So year on year we're growing quite.
And I guess in the hand, Chris, with that, like Steve just said, it's completion down your way of 4.3 months to complete. You're looking at it now saying this is a secure way to get it tied before, moved before, or sold before Christmas, I'm guessing. Is that sort of thing? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. And without wanting to do an auction special, although we might do something at some point, we'll get a good guest on rather than just myself boring everybody. But, you know, if you get 28 days, you exchange straight away with completion 28 days later, it makes total sense. If you've got a property which has, again, another topic we might talk about is overvaluing pricing on the open market at some point as well, and how we control that. But if someone's been on the market for 2 years, I'm seeing properties on the market 2-3 years sometimes, and they're asking for valuations. And I'm saying, well, look, this is why you started off at the wrong price perhaps. But it's vacant, you're paying council tax a lot of the time, bills, the value has gone down because it possibly started off too high on the open market to start off as well, and the market's changed without really adapting to those prices anyway. So auction is a really good method, well, unconditional auction is a really good method there as well, and without going into the pros and cons of the auction different methods, it's certainly keeping me busy this week, and will continue for a long time, I think. So if you can see it as an estate agent point of view, if you can see it as an added value extension of what you offer, then one or two every 1-2 months, you know, with near on guaranteed income as long as you can price it correctly, then yeah, you're in a good place.
Really. I lost two this week, 25 grand over what I valued it for, and 0.8% profit.
Yeah. It's a difficult one because you kind of think when I value auction properties, obviously I have a lot of different parameters which I take in, and I want to get as many different people interested as possible, because ultimately that makes a good bid in numbers and gets the best value. But on the open market, I guess that, you know, sometimes it's like, well, it's so individual. You're looking for one person or two people. You know, it's not always the masses. The only way you're going to get the masses involved is if it's so cheap. It means, you know, people can jump up the ladder twice without you going to once.
And I'm guessing, Steve, in your area, you're thinking it's not worth you taking that risk. You might as well wait and hopefully be second agent than you are to put all your money and marketing into it the first time for the wrong price or the wrong fee.
It's about to say that.
100%. When they were properties that we sold exactly the same 2 years ago at 375. Now, by rights, it's not 375 now, and an agent's taking it on for 400,000. The chances are it's going to get downvalued anyway by the mortgage lender. So, you know, like I said to the team, we'll just walk away. Just walk away. It's £160,000 if you sell the same units at 0.8% that you're losing. You know, we've got 105 units to sell, £1,000 worth of commission in the filing cabinet. Let's focus on those motivated vendors.
Yeah, definitely. And you may even see it second time round, as long as they're not too embarrassed to come back to you, you may see it second time round anyway.
Yeah, and then the fee goes up even more.
it makes it easier to warrant a higher fee, though, doesn't it, when someone's coming back to you and saying, well, you haven't sold it now, so.
Yeah. Exactly.
So that's a bit about sort of property market there. Football wise, Premier League wise, thank goodness the Premier League was back last weekend. It was so good to wake up on a Sunday morning and just switch that match of the day on, bacon sandwich, after doing a run, obviously, and watch all those matches which you didn't catch up on. Some really interesting results. So I'll run them through them quickly. Saturday we saw Arsenal beat Nottingham Forest. Again, I do worry about Ange. But it's too early to call for his head. Of course it is, if you're not a Forest fan. But I just, you know, he lost in midweek as well. Bournemouth 2, Brighton 1. That's a great result. Again, Bournemouth are flying.
Surprisingly doing well as well, aren't they? Because they lost, obviously, quite a few players to Real Madrid and Liverpool, etc. And I thought they would struggle. I really, really did. And actually, they've done all right.
What a football club, though. 10,000 fans is, I think, I might be quoted slightly on there, but a 10,000 capacity, which you could be classed as League 1, League 2 capacity. Like Steve just said, they've got these players coming through. It must be something about your South Coast, because Brighton and places like Bournemouth, they have ability to develop players or scout good players and then turn them into 70, 50, 80, 100 million pound players. So the revenue can't be, whether you've got 10,000 fans, full stadium, you must limit it, but they do really well with what they've got down there, to be fair.
Yeah, they're doing something right, definitely. Yeah, they definitely are. And then we had a couple of, they are boring matches. Real ball, school ball match. Get the fishing rod out. Crystal Palace against Sunderland 0-0, and then Everton against Villa 0-0. So Palace, what did you make of Palace, Steve?
We just didn't take our chances. You know, to be fair, Sunderland goalkeeper had an absolute worldie. You know, I watched the highlights like you on Sunday morning. I can't stay up late anymore. I fall asleep and wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go, damn it, I've missed match of the day again. But yeah, they just didn't take their chances. The guy Pino that's replaced Eze essentially had a one-on-one and he screwed it wide. Another one from 6 yards out. Defender got his leg in the way, went over, and it went on like that. So if I'm looking at it, I think we've dropped 2 points there. We need to win games like that and push on. So and then we had Millwall midweek, obviously, in the Carabao Cup.
I mean, Sunderland, going back to Sunderland, they're doing all right, aren't they, really? All the teams that came up, Leeds, Sunderland, Burnley. I know Burnley are down there currently, but they're actually not...
They're a better Burnley this year. They're definitely a better Burnley this year than the last few teams. And 100%. Scott Parker's getting a tune out of them. I think they won't get hammered like they did before, but I still think they'll go down. They'll still go down, definitely.
Yeah, I think so. Everton Villa.
Yeah, I suppose I can't disagree with Steve. I feel like it's 2 points drop, but as an Everton fan, you're always happy to get a point. So it's a tough one. But I feel we probably, with the chances in the game, if you look at the 3 minute highlights of the game, Villa had one chance, which was deflected off the back of Tarps' foot, lob Pickford went wide. The rest of it was us, probably a bit like Steve, really. We didn't take our chance as well. Eto, a couple dropped him. Jack Grealish against his old team, he had a chance as well. I tell you what, Michael Keane had two headers and they put Martinez back in goal. That's the difference. I don't know if any of you saw the highlights, but the second header from Michael Keane that was looping just over him, I'm not convinced many other keepers save that, especially if they had the other keeper in. I know they say they do a rotation. Might be something slightly to do with a bit more than that, but Martinez wanted out. But if they put him back in goal, that 100% improves that Villa team instantly.
Did you go, Jamie? Yeah,
I didn't go to that one, unfortunately, because I was away in Newcastle. So I didn't go to that one. My next game is Tuesday. Unfortunately, I couldn't get tickets to Anfield. My son's never been and desperate to go. But when I last looked on ticket.net, they're £826 for one ticket. So in the away end. So that's a no-go. But we are going to the Carabao Cup on Tuesday, which is Wolves away. So we are going to that. It's my next game.
That'll be good.
Nice. Fulham beat Leeds.
Anyone see the goal again? Poor lad. Oh.
Yeah.
Falling backwards and headed it in. Great header, to be fair, just the wrong end, unfortunately. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's the kind of goal I would have scored back when I was playing, to be honest. I remember scoring once with my knee and I didn't know where the hell it went. Yeah, it's crazy. Newcastle beat Wolves 1-0. Again, worry about
Wolves. I don't
know, they
signed the manager up last night, didn't they, to a new contract. And that's Granlar.
Yeah,
and
I like that. He signed his
contract extension today. He's the centre-forward. So, and he didn't play when we played him the first time around and beat him 3-2. So be interesting Tuesday, because I'd imagine they'll either... Well, you look forward to this weekend, you think, will Wolves be bothered about the Carabao Cup, or will they try and... I suppose Leeds is a hit for them to try and get points, isn't it? So it's a tough one, really.
Yeah, I like what they've done with Wolves regards to, you know, committing with the manager. The striker definitely needs to play, and they're a much better team with him in the team. Like most teams are, if they've got a good striker. And I think I did speak to a Wolves fan during the week, actually, on evaluation, funny enough. Although they're disappointed in the results, they actually feel that they've been playing okay and they like the style. So they're behind them.
That's good.
So he's got some money in the bank, should we say. And then we had West Ham at home against Mighty Spurs. Kind of a game of two halves, really. I saw the highlights there as well, watched the match. It was quite 50-50 for a lot of the first half, from what I saw. They were making best use of us playing a diamond, well, a reverse triangle, I'd say, in the midfield. So we had number six and then two sort of players in front of him, and they were just using the space to either side. It didn't really change that much on the second half. It's just we got the goal, obviously, and then went on to win 3-0. See, it looks comprehensive. I just think West Ham looked devoid of ideas. I don't fit in there. I don't really think that he's got much time.
If he loses against Palace, Palace on Saturday, then I think that'll be it. But the surprising thing is that Slaven Bilic is rumoured to be going back. Just such a West Ham decision.
Fans wanted him out because
it's boring. West Ham are so typical in their transfers. People like Callum Wilson and, you know, people at the end of their careers. And then you're thinking about getting rid of Potter for an old manager. Like, it's just, weirdly run club.
I heard nostalgia was coming back as well. I heard that Frank was being lined up for a return to West Ham. Obviously, I think he's done five in a row, or four or five in a row with Coventry. I think he was being rumoured to be amongst the names of people they want in West Ham.
He needs to, in my opinion, he needs to do something with Coventry and not just jump from club to club. I mean, he needs to have some more long term stuff and actually, you know, be successful there. Because then he'll get a better job and they'll have longer to do it in there as well. I know he's a legend, sort of a legend, although I think when he left they weren't too happy at West Ham. But it's just difficult to see where West Ham are. Of course, as a Spurs fan, you know, we got rid of Ange after winning something. I totally get that. So you've got to be careful what you wish for. And yes, we've got a very good manager in Frank and it's much better. But for West Ham in particular, get rid of Moyes. I know Moyes sort of wanted to leave anyway by the end of it. He'd had enough. But the fans never liked the style of play. And it is important, the style of play, obviously, as a Spurs fan. It is really important, the style of play. But you've got to be careful, wishful, because there's so many good teams in that Premier League now, isn't there? And it's really hard to beat. And even the teams come up, like we said, 0-0s, 1-0s. It's close. There's no Southampton here.
If you're careful, you wish for. Someone asked me this morning and said about Moyes. And I can remember Moyes' first time around Everton, we were finishing fourth, fifth, seventh, eighth, sixth, fifth, fourth. And everyone's like, I know we need to push on now. And then you look at we had some good years with Silva's first year and Roberto Martinez, and then the Ange still makes me, I can't believe we've had him as a manager with James Rodriguez in there. But there's a lot of negatives that come from it, and you've got to be careful. You've got to realistically ask what you think you can achieve. Fans that wanted it, Moyes gone last time was a bit crazy, really, for me. To get him back now, you see what he's doing, and it ain't always pretty, but he's getting results and points, to be fair.
I think it's like you, Stephen, at Palace. We've got a fantastic manager. You've won two trophies in a sense last season, sort of this season, in a way. But you're not going to say, oh, let's push on now, we need to win the league, because you're nowhere near that, you know? So you've got to temper your expectations back a bit and think, actually, you can be a really successful club by being in the mid-table or pushing for European and getting the odd cup. And if that's all you do, well, that's better than being relegated and spending loads of money on a rubbish manager.
We know our level. But we know our level. They know their level.
Yeah, you've got to know a level.
If we can get top 10 and go on a cup run again, I'd take it. You know, if we can do something in the conference, that would be amazing. But we're never going to be top 5. Not in a million years, not unless we get some massive investment, but then we're limited as well because of PSR. So, you know, we are what we are.
I think the problem comes, Steve, if you finish sixth, fans get used to finishing sixth. They're like, oh, is there a golden, that extra step? And then you try and chase that extra step and it can either go brilliantly or horribly wrong, can't it? That's the problem.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said before, retaining Glasner is massively important. Adding one decent player probably every season and retaining what we can and doing that, you've got to accept that, definitely.
It's a balancing act, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It really is. Gone are the days, you know, you look at Chelsea, you obviously drew 2-2 with Brentford there as well at the weekend, and they've signed people on long-term contracts and they've got some big wages there not playing and in their bomb squad as well, who are never going to be able to play again. But they're happy because they're on big wages. Just turn up for training and have a kick around, you know. a lot of football, Premier League footballers, well, there's quite a few of them, don't actually like playing football. Yeah. It's just a job for them. The ones that are really successful are the ones who actually live and breathe it, I think. And it's rare to get those types of players, I think, as well. But Chelsea in particular, you know, gone are the days where somebody, an oil giant, can come in and buy them and spend X amount of money and just put it away. Those times are gone, aren't they? And you look at Newcastle, richest club in the world, can't even keep hold of Isaac. And
I think that, yeah, I think to... Chelsea fan last night. Shame. And the problem, I think, the problem you've got is when you've got too many players to pick from, if your left back has a bad game, you can instantly change him with three or four players. If your right back, your centre midfield, you get where I'm going with it. If you've got eight players in that position, you're forever chopping and changing because you can go, well, you weren't very good today, I'm going to put you in. Whereas sometimes I think players that take a few games to bed into it and you go, he didn't have a great game, but we haven't really got another choice. 3 weeks later, he's the most dependable person in your team. But I think Chelsea have got that many players. I know their Premier League squad is, but they can change it and keep changing it and changing it and changing it without having to really give someone a chance, to be fair. So I think the smaller clubs probably have to go with what they've got a little bit more. Whereas I heard him come out and say that Pedro's not his main number. He's not his main number nine. I was thinking, he's left Brighton. He wants to score. What does he think? Is it 10 then? Or is he just saying he's not his main number nine? So it's a strange thing to say, really.
I don't think he knows. That's the problem. He's got too much choice, I think, as well. And the main thing about Chelsea in particular, I think, is that they haven't got any good centre-halves. Their defence is weak. Their best player, Colwell, is injured, I think, still. They haven't got any other team. I'll put Spurs in for this. You know, of course, we're going to get injured at some point. But Van der Ven and Romero, you'd have them most injured.
Do you hear what Jamie O'Hara said about those two?
Yeah. Jamie O'Hara.
The best centre-back partnership, and I quote, in the world currently.
Yeah, you might have got a little bit carried away as a
surely that's clickbait
player and fan.
Surely that's
selling papers, yeah. Steve, isn't it? Surely, isn't it?
Oh, that boy. Honestly.
But you do know what this is going to be. I'm going to publicise this podcast now as Steve Green says yeah. that. Van der Ven and Romero are.
It's Van Dijk's up there. Gahey's up there.
Of course
there.
He is.
But, yeah, not the greatest respect. They're not the best pairing in the world. You know that.
No.
It's true. Do you want to talk about United?
It's true. Okay, not at all, mate.
No, move on. Who cares about United?
That clip that you probably saw going around the internet where United let the third goal in and Haaland's 10 yards in United in his own half and he's through on goal. So you see that clip? And I thought to myself, how on earth can that be? How can all them defenders be pushed that far forward? Haaland's 10 yards in his own half, onside, and there's no one else after him. I thought, it's a disaster, just complete disaster. You wouldn't let your kids, my kids' 13s wouldn't be like that. 14, should I say now, it's a disaster.
But it's the United fans that are all online going, he was offside, and like, he's in his own half.
Yeah, that's because too much watching it on TV.
The writing's on the wall. That is this season's slow death, Amarin, unfortunately, because there's too much.
Southgate's come out this week and said he is, the only job he'll take is Man United.
Oh, wow. Good. Yeah, get Southgate.
He might consolidate, but you know, I can't see him pushing on and getting them back.
That's it, consolidation. I mean, to be honest, if you look right across the good managers, and I put obviously David Moyes has been there, hasn't he? So he knows more than most. But Glasner, Franks, you know, there are some good managers out there who do, you know. It's just difficult backing people. You kind of need to be a big character as well with Man U. And it's amazing how they're still the richest club. They make more revenue than anybody else because their commercial model is fantastic, considering that they haven't got a stadium which will be up standing.
They've just announced that, haven't they? They've made a huge amount of profit this week. Yeah.
And you're like, wow, that is, they're like Real Madrid. The only reason they can get players is the wages structure. Of course, and they can afford to be able to pay that with those wages, but the romance has gone. And I did see something earlier on a week where they were saying about the romance of football clubs. And when you're growing up now, obviously we remember Man United, Liverpool, Arsenal, you know, doing really well. People now just think that Man City are up there. So at some point, Man City will be the club if it isn't already, to go to. They'll take that mantle of Man United. So, because people don't see Man United as winners.
I still think David Moyes would be manager of Man United. He wasn't the first person to follow in Alex Ferguson.
Totally agree.
I think if he'd had someone else between him, even one of the others, even a Mourinho or someone after that, I still think that Moyes would still be manager of Man United if he wasn't the first person to follow him through the door.
Mm.
I wonder if he ever thought about that, actually. You know what? It's too early.
If you read his book and what he says, Ferguson told him he's going to be the manager. He called him to his house and told him he's going to be the manager of Man United. They were mates, obviously, but...
So he didn't get a choice.
Yeah, if you read what he said he went round and he said, you will be the next manager of Man United. So, I don't know.
Well. Right, okay, so today's episode, property-wise, we're going to tackle a topic which I seem to speak to Steve about it quite often when I speak to him now about home information packs, HIPs. The question on the table today is, could they be reintroduced to help the property market today? The way I see it, it's an interesting one. I mean, everything moving online, buying and selling process becoming more digital, it's easy to wonder if HIPs could actually kind of be a game changer now. And when I say that, I'm saying it in it, you know, in the context of just individually. Of course, there's only one thing in a long line of things which need to change on the private treaty market, such as you could have the best solicitor in the world and estate agent, but if you're in a chain, your stuff, because you're tied to the lowest and the slowest, shall we say. So it wasn't actually plain sailing, though, was it, when it was actually launched there as well? I guess you guys have got memories of HIPs.
Yep.
Jamie, you've been in the industry long enough, haven't you? Steve, I remember HIPs being introduced, but I also remember there was a backlash at the time as well from the public and some estate agents as well. I think the big question is whether they would work today, and we have more tech, etc., but do buyers and sellers really want more upfront commitment? Because I think from their side, no, yes and no, but from our side, probably yes. Or from your side,
yeah, definitely. I think back in 2007, 2008, it was frustrating that it took 14 days to get these packs ready and you couldn't legally market the property until, you know, they were built. And it was incredibly hard to get £400 up front from a vendor and £250 marketing fee that we were charging at the time. You know, I remember having a chip and pin machine in my bag. So it was hard to educate them and get that money up front. But it certainly sorted out your motivated vendors to your ones that are like, let's give it a go. And if it sells, great. If it doesn't, no problem. Something needs to be done. Like, talking to these estate agents up in Wrexham, everyone's in the same boat. This isn't a regional thing. And I think David Mintz has put on LinkedIn this morning from Kerfuffle that, you know, he wants to make it his one-man aim to change things because he feels that there is no passion and in love from conveyancers that are doing this transaction. It's very much like it's a job. There's no passion and love anymore. You know, Project 28, is that going to work? You're only as fast as the slowest solicitor within the chain.
Correct.
So that's not going to work. So it then goes down to going back to home information packs, and I believe that it's probably the only way of quickening up the process and for a variety of other reasons, get motivated vendors on the market. So,
Jamie,
I actually agree with everything. Well, not shouldn't do, but I agree with everything Steve said. I think the problem you have, I remember it last time, was commercially, solicitors like you to buy searches because obviously they have a markup on it. So if you're going with your... I can remember some last time that wouldn't accept searching a HIP pack because it wasn't done by them. And they were saying their indemnity doesn't cover them for a third party. So they were still charging for searches. So it's, I suppose, like Steve said, we need something. We need something, whatever it's going to be. A HIP pack in its current format, it's a start, maybe. But you've got to iron out that the commercial viable for a solicitor has got to accept these have got to come from this pack. They then can't then charge their client for further searches or to please themselves. So I agree. I suppose it's desperation, like Steve said. It's not just us. It's the whole country. So what we need something, and that's something that's tried and tested, rightly or wrongly, if it went well or badly, but it's something that's been there. So is it an adaptation to that? We need something. What's included in it probably would be my next question.
Well, I think from those who weren't familiar, we wind the clock back a bit. HIPs were first introduced, like Steve said, 2007 under Labour government, and they were supposed to... The aim of it was to streamline the home buying and selling process. Of course it was streamline, as in make it a little bit easier, more straightforward, I guess, with more transparent from the outset. And obviously coming from auctions, I guess, I've seen both sides of it. Auctions-wise, you get an auction legal pack and that's obviously available before the auction date. Sometimes it'd be ideal if we get it straight away when we start marketing, but sometimes that isn't possible and it's put a bit further down the line. But they are pretty straightforward. They included, obviously, EPCs and the home information pack, proper details, local authority searches, like you said, Jamie, and even title deeds as well. And I think there was also a survey involved as well on the property. They never got far. It was supposed to go in there, but obviously then they didn't do it because not every surveyor was on every...
And that's the worst thing you've got there is them saying, well, you've had your surveyor do that, so I'm going to still get my own surveyor. And there's that questioning thing. I think the big thing for me, Chris, is like Steve said, if there's no passion in the job that they do, and I'm not calling them out at all, if there's no passion in the job they do, them being convinced, there's no passion. I think you said David Mintz put it out there. Are they bothered how long it...
How long are they bothered how long it takes?
Because we want to speed up. We want to speed up for the client. But for them, like I think we said last week, we hide behind the quoted, well, it's only been 15 weeks. It's not been your 16th week yet. Do they want it to go faster? I mean, we do for revenue, and so I'm sure they do. But do they care if we could knock 4 weeks off it? Does that matter to them? I don't know, to be honest.
Well, I think that if in theory, if you get the information up front, there's no hidden surprises down the line, I guess. And a lot of the frustrating thing for a lot of times is when something's flagged, which you're not sure of yourself. And I don't know, but you guys actually get... Do you order searches yourselves or anything? Do you do anything on that certain properties or no?
No.
Just title plans and... Okay, so auction, I will order searches, yeah. I do no sale, no fee. We do a lot of volume. That's why we do that. Yes, local searches, dependent on the authority, they can take some time. But the general, the rest of the, you know, water and drainage and environmental are pretty straightforward. But the local searches are what kind of flag the issues usually anyway. So I can see the benefit of both sides to it. But on the flip side of it, the price of something up front, it goes into a different conversation as well, I guess. It would sort of sort out the wheat from the chaff a little bit regards to actually, do you really want to go on the market?
Definitely.
Am I right in saying that?
I think the only
money up front is a confirmation that yes, we do want to move when we know this is a cost. Bang, we're going in for it. Yes, it's not your end cost and it's only a couple of £100, but at least it would say, okay, we are sure, because there must be, I don't know the figures on this, and maybe EA 20, whatever it's called, will know the figures on this. They won't know this. How many people are actually on the market who actually don't really want to move? They'd like to.
I saw some stats the other day, which was from a corporate agent, which I won't mention because I can't remember exactly, but over 50% of the houses they put on the market, they never go through to a completion with. So you can see, like we've just said, we would love to, I personally would love something, I'm not going to call it a hit pack, but I'm going to call it something in that, so we can, in your words, Chris, weed them out the wheat from the chaff. I get that. But I also get the flip side. I remember, and probably Steve will tell you, where you'd had somebody go, well, I only want to go on the market for that one house.
Yep.
And then, so I do see, I want it. So I'm not saying I don't, but I do see the sitting on the fence bit where they went, Jamie, if it wasn't for that house, I absolutely adore my house. But if I can get that house, I will move. I would love it to weef out the ones that definitely don't want to move, that they're just trying to do arm. But it's hard for the ones that they've been honest and said, I generally would move for that one house. But if you don't get it, I'm happy in my own house. So they're the ones that might slow that market. The not the chances, but the ones that have got a realistic chance, should I say.
Yeah, I get that. I guess that I was listening to a podcast the other day and they were talking about pricing, and, you know, we'll have a better conversation about this together on a podcast about overvaluing and stuff, like I said. But they were saying about AVM models, about auto-evaluation models, and obviously they're massively flawed because they take averages of the postcode and every house is different. This has got an extension. This is much better. It's got an extra bedroom, all these other things. So they're really just a model for somebody who can't be bothered going to the property, I guess, really, as a drive-by. It gives you a general feel of what a house in that area might be like. And then you can gauge that against the sold prices as well. But you do think, actually, if there was an established way of actually, an agreed way of actually giving a value, because ultimately you could sell a property for 500 grand, but if a surveyor goes and sees it and it has only got comps for 400,000, then that is the value of the property. So theoretically, if you went for the reverse of it and actually had, I'm thinking aloud here, a surveyor's report in there which says this has been confirmed that this is the value of the property and there will be lenders for this, for instance, because they're unable to pay a lender, subject to your own financial ability, then that cuts over value, doesn't it?
Yeah, there was a mortgage valuer that came in the office last week before, and she said, we have to find three properties within a kilometre as the crow flies that match what you're selling. And if we don't think it's worth it, we will downvalue it. And yeah, we've had one this week, downvaluation again.
Was it within 5%, Steve, as well, or was it outside of 5%?
She didn't say sort of percentages, to be honest. She was just saying, I need to find similar properties of that square footage. And if I can't find it...
When I was younger, you couldn't downvalue for less than 5%, but now I understand that's not a thing anymore. So I'm guessing the 5% was the buffer between us three walking into a house and what all three of us would pay for it would probably vary with how much we wanted it. But they used to say you couldn't downvalue between... for 5%, but I'm not sure if that's still a thing at all anymore.
Well, here's the thing. I'm really jumping to our pricing thing, but hey, that's the way sometimes podcasts evolve. What if... my model regarding auction, unconditional auction, we get a guide price, and it's 100 grand, for instance. That's a price which is gonna give the amount of interest we need to be able to sell that property. It's been valued by a surveyor for finance purposes at 150 grand, for instance. It's up to the people what they pay. But that's the value for the finance as well. So if you did marketing that way, it'd be quite interesting.
But you sort of already tell them what you see. You're hooking them on the 100. Your answer really is what the finance value is, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, I'm just trying to get a feeling if it would make a difference to pricing, I guess, really, if there's a way of actually sticking. Because ultimately, what are a lot of hiccups in actually sales?
Don't get me started. Surveyors. Yeah. Don't get me started, but...
Affordability, ticked. Legal stuff regards to right of way and access, things like that. Well, a good agent, and you both know this because you both do it, I'm sure, is go out and, okay, look, who's that lane at the back belong to? Okay, is there a right of way on that? Oh, I don't know. Oh, actually, I've got the deeds here. Oh, let me show you. It doesn't always work out that way, but you're going to find that information before you list something, because why would you list something when you think there might be an issue, because you'll spend the money in marketing, you'll get it sold, and it'll fall through. That side of it, I can see you're never going to be able to put that into a legal pack situation, not a legal pack, a homes information pack, or whatever we call it. But it would be quite interesting if we did it, just with the basics. We could speed up the process to start off with. The conveyancing side of it, well, that is another argument, because it's a difficult one to talk about, but we'll get a specialist on and they can tell us why they do things in a certain way and format. But even down to searches, if your searches are in there, I know they do only last 3 months, although I'm not sure why they only last 3 months.
I don't know why that.
There isn't.
Because that's a planning cycle. Where I live, a planning cycle is 12 weeks, and maybe in that period of time, you'd imagine that if something had gone in, it would appear within the 12-week cycle, maybe. So that would be my only guess on a local search for like planning and stuff, maybe.
Well, maybe we'll get a planning person in on the podcast who supports one of the Premier League teams, and they can tell us all about why it's not extended 6 months, because that would solve a lot of issues if you do it from the outset.
That it is.
Boring team.
Yeah.
You reckon? Maybe Liverpool. Maybe Arsenal. Not another Arsenal fan. And I'll be honest with you, I've had a lot of people say they want to be on the podcast, and there's a lot of Arsenal fans out there who would like to have their voice out. So I'm going to have to limit that as a Spurs fan.
Well, they'd probably have more voice on the podcast than they will in the Emirates. It's like a library.
All Arsenal fans that are involved in property, you're quite welcome to come on and speak to Steve about that. But I mean, the timing is a lot better now with something like this, isn't it, with Home Information Pack? You've got platforms like... obviously, all the portals, that's another conversation, obviously. And others that already provide a ton of data online. And with automation and AI, we should be able to get stuff together really quickly now. So that 14 days thing you said, Steve, realistically, it's got to be a lot quicker.
If it's five working days, fine. Not a problem at all. But it shouldn't be, and I don't expect it to be 2 weeks. Definitely not. Not in this day and age. It's nearly 20 years ago.
And the market's much more savvy now, and buyers are much more savvy digitally, I think, in particular. So they're used to doing everything online. now, much more than they ever were. Remember when AML came into the state agency, and then we were told you have to do it online. We were like, what? My ground won't be able to do this. But they do now. They're absolutely fine. They do a DocuSign.
Face recognition.
Most of the time.
It's generational, isn't it? Yeah, a 70-year-old now is a lot younger in mind than what a 70-year-old was 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, sometimes the good ideas are not bad ideas. They're just launched at the wrong time, perhaps. So, you know, it's probably too early sometimes. And business in particular, there's a lot of businesses out there and ideas which have tried before and failed, but then they've tried again and actually worked because the market's ready for them, if that makes sense. So it's moving so fast, the market. I mean, I think there's definitely more pressure to get everything sorted early, in my opinion. But, you know, 4 months conveyance in time. What you've told me, or estate agents have told me, regards to, you know, well, we're still working for searches and stuff towards the end of a transaction because it hasn't been ordered early enough. I get it because of the 3 month thing, but if you're 3 months away, you pretty much know, you should know if it's going to be going through or not, I would think. So it's, and I guess misinformation, you know, how reliant we are on the internet and AI, getting more AI as well to make sure that information in any pack, I guess, is accurate as well. You know, who's policing that? So there's lots of question marks there, but I think in theory it's a pretty good idea, both, in my opinion, both from both sides. It just depends on what it actually
involves. I think the cost point would be the interesting one, wouldn't it, to be fair? I think that'll be... the cost point would be it would be interesting to me, because I think if it was cost not too expensive, I think it's a great idea, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, the problem we had when they first launched, I remember back quite vividly, is that we were going out and I was losing listings. Or they were querying a listing price because, oh, your HIPS back is X amount and this one over here is £200 less, and it's because we'll put £200 on that because we'll use it as almost a withdrawal fee, if that makes sense. And because nobody knew how they were going to sell it.
And agents were listing even though they didn't have a HIP pack as well. I know that happened, definitely. And they won the listing that way. Well, we don't have to wait 2 weeks. We'll just get you live and take the risk. So, which is wrong.
Yeah, well, it's like EPZs as well, isn't it, now? Nobody really
believes. It's like AML. I've got a chap at the moment, he's just withdrawn his offer because he doesn't like our processes in regards to asking where the deposit is coming from. So he's withdrawn his offer and another property because that state agent isn't asking him about where his deposit is coming from. And again, we could have a subject on that at some point, because until that is policed, and I'd love to know who the agent is locally, they're going to do it. They're going to continue to do it. I was talking to Amy Shields yesterday about this exact case. I'm getting more and more people questioning my policies in regards to AML and the general public, and that they're not happy in us doing it. It's tough.
Steve, it's hard to get an offer in on a house to appear at the moment. The hours are all agents saying, but it's right for the right reasons. And we say, if you're our vendor, we do this for you. This is the reason why. But I think I suppose it depends. Like you said, you've obviously got somebody not doing it, which doesn't help you out. Whereas a lot of them up here do it.
You'd always find an agent who doesn't do it, and when you ask the question, oh, I need this, and they're like, well, the people I'm buying off never asked me that, or the people I'm selling that never asked me that.
Crazy.
It's always, and until it's policed, and it comes down to regulation and all these other things we can talk about to along the tooth, it's always going to remain the same, isn't it? So, you know, I refuse to believe that we're broken to a point where we can't be fixed or at least helped, but
everybody's got to want to be fixed. That's the thing.
Yeah. Could be a buy-in from everybody.
Yeah.
A movement.
Excellent. Well, very good, very good. Right, okay, so let's talk about Premier League for this weekend coming up. We've got some pretty cracking matches. Jamie, you're our first mate. Liverpool, Everton. Everton away at Liverpool. 12:30 kickoff. I'm going to kick off. I think that you've got a good chance, mate. Liverpool, again, you could say it's because what champions do. They're eking out results. I watched some of the highlights against Burnley, and Burnley didn't offer anything. Of course, they didn't. They just sort of sat back, but that's all they pretty much could do. Isaac is a class player, and they've got a lot of class players there. But do you think you can get something out of this, or do you see a draw?
Maybe I can't bring myself to comment on it. I'm really sorry, but I don't want to tempt fate. I cannot. I would love to be able to come here next whenever we do episode 3 and say we did it, but I can't. I just can't bring myself to comment.
What if I say to you, you've got to have an opinion on it,
draw.
Mate. You've got
to say something. He's not going to,
because I can't draw. Do this every bloody month,
draw.
Every week.
anyone else but them, but a draw.
I agree.
I'll say draw. And that's me with a positive hat on.
1-1.
2-2.
1-0. 2-2. Desmond.
Yeah, I think it'll be 2-2.
It could be. I think there's so much.
They can't defend. They got lucky the other night against South Africa and Madrid, didn't they? Really? They were 2-0 up, 2-2. Missing that Gehi.
Definitely.
They are. And you know, thank goodness for every other club that they didn't get him.
But don't you think they're turning into the Man United of the 90s? They're grinding out these last-minute goals. They are turning into Fergie's United. And I hate saying it, Jamie. Champions do this.
Yeah. Then, I think if they don't... If one of them... If something happened to Van Dijk, which I'm not wishing it does, if something happened to Van Dijk before they could get Marcus Gehi in January... I do think they could struggle. And I've spoke to a few Liverpool fans as well, which I still will speak to them. But they've said that he's beginning to don't want to go in for challenges. So I think he's got bad knees or hips or something. And he's beginning to... And you just think if something happened to him and they haven't obviously got what they wanted in Marcus Gehi, would that... Attacking-wise, I still sit here now and don't know how they're going to get Isaac in that team tomorrow. Apparently, I've read this morning that he's going to start, which I keep thinking to myself, well, who are they taking out? So, attacking-wise, but that just that defensive bit, I think you're right. That may be the undoing of what they can do, basically.
Yeah, but most teams are a defence, like we talked about it, there's very few class central defenders out there, especially partners as well. Konate and is the weaker link, obviously. If they had the defence of Saliba and the other guy at Arsenal,
Gabriel,
phenomenal.
Gabriel,
I wouldn't be talking about a draw. I'd be saying,
I think you're right. I think it'd be full of passion, and it should be as a neutral. They're normally a good game to watch. I think the days of people flying into red card challenges. There's not many local boys left, if that makes sense. So, but they understand, they get the feeling for it. But in the days of your Nevilles and them sort of people and your Gerrards and people flying into challenges and slamming people into, them days are probably gone. But I think there'll still be enough passion from the energy of it to make it a good game for a neutral anyway, hopefully. And I'll be off comms if we Brighton, lose by more than two goals for quite a long while, just in case anyone needs me.
You should have just said that. Why don't you just say, I fear that we're going to lose by more than two goals? Then that makes more sense, and we could have cut out all that other stuff about
we'll
you
be
saying,
all right.
Oh, I've done we'll a bit right. on the fence. Brighton versus Tottenham, so Spurs are away. We obviously bounced back with West Ham. Reasonable result in the midweek in Europe, although we were obviously lucky with that goal. That was watching Bruce Grobbelaar from back in the day, that was one of his mistakes. I think that's going to be ready to be tight. Frank's teams don't, we've let one goal in so far. We don't give away very much, but we are, I think, still open to a mistake. Van der Ven's got us out of trouble quite a few times. Again, talking about centre-backs. But I see this as a quite close game, and I think we'll either win 2-1.
You struggle down that South Coast team sometimes, don't you, Spurs? With you like Brighton's, Bournemouth, and even, I know it's not South Coast, but Palace, I always think they could be your bogey team sometimes. And the other one is Burnley, you mentioned earlier. But I think that'll be a tight game for Spurs. Mm.
It is.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tight.
Yeah, it is the sort of game that you could lose 1-0 or win 3-1. You just don't know what Spurs you're going to get. And it is a tough place. I love going to Brighton Palace. Great, great atmosphere, that is.
Burnley versus Nottingham Forest. Now, that is a must. Burnley, I think... I think they'll do it as well. I think Nottingham Forest, I think Ange, because as I say, it's too early, but he needs a win. He needs a reaction from that, because if he doesn't get it from certain players, that's not good for him in that job and with his manager. And could we be looking at the shortest tenure in the Premier League for quite some time?
Burnley at home, I can see it being a draw.
I like the guy.
Forest at home might be different, but Burnley at home, I can see it being a draw.
Yeah.
And I can't see him. Nottingham Forest, good at
they're all right.
It might be a 1-0.
They've got Morello.
1-0, 1-0. It's not
Mikalenko.
Yeah, it's not going to be high scoring, is it?
Anya at left back. Is it Anya?
Yeah.
Tell you what, we are good at pronunciations.
This is my calling.
Okay, West Ham at home against...
The Mighty Palace.
We've got to go away win. Let's get Steve. We've got to go away win.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a way win as well, and I think he's going to lose his job.
That's what will get them a win, though, also, because if the players know that, I don't know, do they want to play for him? Do they not want to play for him? It's one of those. Like, I think we won there at the end of last season 2-0, It's not an easy place. I think we've lost 3-0 there, 2-1 there, etc. So obviously I want the win. It wouldn't surprise me if it's a draw. It also wouldn't surprise me if they turn it on and get Potter a result and he avoids the sack. So I will go draw.
I'm going Palace win, Mateta, first goal scorer.
Well, he needs to get back on the scoring because he's been, yeah, quite quiet recently.
Yeah, and I'm going for a 2-1 win for Palace, with it being 1-0 to Palace, West Ham scoring, and then losing it in the last 10. Mentality-wise, I think...
you're putting Steve's heart on the line into the 80th minute there. He's going to be stressing until that 80th yeah. first minute.
What's new? He's a Palace fan. The only difference is... you know,
if we win this, or draw, 16 games unbeaten. Yeah.
Exactly. You've got...
That's ridiculous. Sorry?
Did you lose to us last out of interest? We beat 2-1, didn't we?
Yeah, I was there. I was at Selhurst for that, yeah. With an Everton fan sat in the Palace end with me.
2-1, was it?
Yeah, it was. It was Alcaraz that scored a screamer. And I was in the end, which is right next door to the Toffees, sat next door to my ex-colleague who was a Toffee, which was really, really hard.
You were telling him to sit on his hands.
Yeah, I did.
Then we've got Wolves Leeds again. That would be quite close.
I think both of them will go there thinking they need to win it, though. Both ways, if that makes sense. I think...
Both need a result. I think you're right there. And yeah, I think it could be high scoring that one. I think it could be 1-1 and 1-1. Perhaps Man U, Chelsea. Interesting Chelsea. Match.
2-0.
Chelsea, I think so.
Garnacho kissing his Man United badge in the corner, right. Sliding on his knees is what I'm going for.
Absolute virus, that guy.
That's almost...
He's a nasty piece of work.
Still got United tattoos, aren't he? Still, he can't get rid of them, so I'm going for a Chelsea. He'll go for a screamer and he'll slide on his knees and kiss his Man United badge.
Good, good. I was going to say something libelous, but I won't say something libelous. Fulham, Brentford. Who cares?
2-2, 1-1, 0-0.
0-0, Borefest.
Yeah, it'd be a draw.
I went to that game. Boring. Yeah, I went to that exact game. I was at an awards conference at EA Masters in November. Free night, got some tickets, went and watched that, and it was awful.
I can imagine.
Fucking bad.
There's better things to do in London than watch Fulford Brentford, surely. Sunday, we've got Bournemouth against Newcastle. That'll be interesting. I think Bournemouth, for me, are the form team. Newcastle, obviously, have been doing okay.
Champions League hangover, though. Champions League hangover.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it might be. It's away as well. Newcastle are better at home. Bournemouth going to win 2-0, I think. They're stronger home. And then Sunderland Villa.
Yeah.
It's my way to Sunderland unless Martinez is not in goal, but it'll be draw.
Yeah.
1-0 Sunderland I'm going for. And then the final game of the weekend. Right, yes, it is. Arsenal versus Man City. And that's a cracker. I'm hoping for a Man City win there.
I don't know how to call that one.
I think Arsenal might do it, to be fair.
Bonnarumma's a game changer there.
Man City, you could be right, mate. Well, you're just talking about, obviously, other keepers. So, yeah, I think you're right. A good keeper. Trafford, of course, when they played us as well, he was the cause of at least one of those goals. So, better keeper, more commanding. And to be honest, it's like putting your largest mate in goal far aside. It's hard to get around him, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, that's it. So... it seems pretty packed weekend. Got some good results though, I think. And we are pretty much finished. Just trying to find my notes. Wraps everything up, really. So could we see reintroduction of Hibs? Possibly. Who's going to win in Premier League? God knows. Palace. Is the property market still broken since we started talking about this?
Steve, I reckon you should do a Gary Lineker promise where if Palace win another cup this year, you have to come on in just your pants to the last podcast of the season.
Nobody needs to see that. Not even the wife wants to see that. So
let's leave it there. You definitely have to go and do it from the office, mate. Okay, so that's it, guys. Next week, we've got some interesting topics. I think we're talking about portals next week, which would be interesting, and the future of them. We might have a guest on there as well, which would be very interesting, our first guest. So thanks for listening, guys, everybody. Listen to Property Premier League. We're back next week with more insights and debates from the world of property to the beautiful game. I've been Chris Mervin.
Thank you very much.
That's Jamie Asper.
Thank you very much.
That's Steve Green.
See you later.
See you later, guys. And that, as I say, is the final whistle.